Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Roger North, and this is Great Info to Know. On today's show, I have a very special guest, Mark Passio. Mark Passio is an independent researcher, public speaker, radio talk show host, conference organizer, and freedom activist from Philadelphia. Mark has undertaken the task of assembling vast amounts of research in the areas of metaphysics, occultism, spirituality, symbology, and consciousness studies. It's really wonderful stuff, by the way. In 2007, Mark began presenting his information in the form of a presentation called What on Earth is Happening, with the intention of bringing the implications of his body of knowledge to greater public awareness. Mark launched his own website at whatonearthishappening.com. That's whatonearthishappening.com. It's a wonderful website. It's full of unbelievable resources, podcasts, etc. And I strongly urge you check it out. I mean, there's just an encyclopedia of knowledge there. It's unbelievable. Anyways, in 2010, Mark began hosting his own internet radio talk show, also called What on Earth is Happening, which continues today in the form of podcasts on Mark's site. Mark is also one of the co-hosts of Free Your Mind, which is at freeyourmindconference.com. That's freeyourmindconference.com, the Philadelphia-based conference on consciousness, mind control, and the occult. Over the years, Mark has worked closely with activist groups in such areas as Tesla, Science Foundation, True Freedom and Prosperity, and Survive and Thrive Philadelphia. Mark's latest endeavor is teaching an intensive seminar called Natural Law, the Real Law of Attraction and How to Apply it in Your Life. Okay, and with that, I'd like to introduce Mark Passio to everybody. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Roger, I'm doing well today. Thanks so much for inviting me on your show.
Well, the pleasure is mine, sir. I've been really looking forward to this. Now, your main focus right now is on natural law, isn't it?
Yes, and really it has always been since I've started publicly speaking about the topics that I do. I think that natural law is really the crux of the entire issue regarding what is taking place in our world and why we are seeing certain results manifest in our reality. And if people understand how natural law operates, I think that they're going to be infinitely better positioned in order to manifest the reality that they want instead of the outcome that they don't want. And if they don't understand natural law, I think we're really headed in a very negative direction, and things are only going to get worse in the external domain. People aren't going to understand how the underlying driving factors are human consciousness and whether or not we align our consciousness to these boundary conditions that I refer to as natural law.
Yeah. What's interesting about the subject of natural law is I have a bachelor's degree in physics, which in a way is studying natural law. It might not be natural human law, but it's the natural law of the, you know, of the mechanical world.
Right.
And the thing is, we all know we live in a universe of cause and effect. You go spend money, your checking accounts get debited. I mean, if I pick up a pen and I let it go, it's going to fall to the earth. You know,
exactly.
I go out and I go eat pizza or something like that. I go get a large pizza. I'm going to put on weight. I mean, we all know cause and effect exists, and we keep on suffering the consequences of pretending we don't know. And we've all done things like that where we squandered money, overate, you know, done something that we knew was going to cause us problems down the road, because this universe, at least at this level, is all about cause and effect. And I think it's just very important that we think about this and understand how it applies to our own life. And this is not some abstract thing out there, that this is something that we're all dealing with all the time. And so
absolutely.
What I'd like to do, excuse me?
I said absolutely, yes.
Okay. So can you tell me a little bit more about natural law? And you know, just kind of give me an idea of how you came to understand this, kind of the genesis of this.
Well, I mean, how I came to understand it is really through enormous suffering and doing the opposite of aligning myself and my behaviors with natural law and understanding that I was only going to get more suffering that way. I highly recommend not going down that path. I wish that humanity wouldn't choose to go down that path. It seems that collectively humanity is choosing to take that direction. I speak out about this topic and try to explain how this works to people because I don't want to see humanity continue to go down that path of suffering that it seems to be taking in the unconscious state that it is in right now, collectively. So that's really what helped me to understand it. I was living a life that was completely out of balance and was not in harmony with these laws of behavior, because that's what natural law ultimately governs. See, it can be a difficult thing for people to accept natural law, particularly if they're of a very imbalanced worldview. So there's an imbalanced worldview toward randomness or the fact that that there is no a governing dynamic regarding behavior in the universe. In other words, everything else could be governed by law. All the physical matter could be governed by physical laws, but consciousness has no boundary conditions and has no governing dynamics that is in place that governs it. And this is often, part of a worldview that doesn't take consciousness into consideration at all. Mm-hmm. So what natural law actually is governing dynamics which act as boundary conditions in nature. And what they are governing is the consequences of our free will choices. So, again, many people don't want to understand this because they want to think that we can do whatever we want and act without consequence, and there's no force in nature that is actually bringing to us the results of what we have chosen through our free will. Another part of it is people often don't want to understand natural law because they don't want the responsibility that goes with it, or they don't want to look at the universe in a certain way. They mm-hmm. want to see it as either completely random or as some sort of a caring being that is directly involved in their life in some way, in such a form, let's say, that it anthropomorphizes the universe and makes mm-hmm. it have the characteristics or the qualities of a human being with the emotional dynamics that go along with a human being. When you tell people on either side of the fence when it comes to this, the randomness idea that there's no purpose to the universe and that, there's no governing dynamics when it comes to consciousness, because they often believe consciousness doesn't exist, then you have many people on the other side that, look at the creation or the creator as something that is directly involved in people's lives and cares about them in a personal sense. I think both of these are sort of worldviews that will not help people to understand what natural law is, mm-hmm. because natural law works like the conditions that govern a computer. And again, many people will hear this and they will hear that to them it will sound like I'm saying that the universe is a computer. I'm not saying it is a computer. I'm saying that it behaves with certain functions like a computer, in such that if we put certain things into it, the outcome is going to be guaranteed in a certain way. If you're mm-hmm. sitting down at a computer and you're writing certain code, okay, and you're compiling that code and you're building a program, that program is always going to behave according to the conditions that you entered into it. So if you put good code into the program, the manifestation on the screen when you execute the program, when you run it, is going to be as expected. It's going to be efficient. It's going to do what you want it to do. If, however, what you put into it is flawed in some way and you have bugs and errors in your coding, the output that you're going to get on the screen is not going to be what you want. It's going to manifest something that is chaotic in some way, and it's going to put out bad output. Well, this is how the universe works. The universe works like that computer. That computer doesn't really care about whether you didn't understand what you were coding. It doesn't care. It just puts out on the screen what you put into it. That's it. Yes. So in a way, that's what natural law is like. And again, that's why it's difficult for many people to accept that this is how our universe works. They don't, on both sides, again, of the fence, a left brain side and a right brain side, people don't want to accept it because those of the left brain bent don't even want to acknowledge that it exists. So those of a right brain bent want to think that it is something that is caring and it is looking at all the factors about why we chose what we chose. All it does is bring the result. That's all that this governing dynamic is put into creation to do. Let me give an example, and I think it might clarify it a little bit. Mm-hmm. If a child, let's say a toddler of 1.5 to 2 years old who, you know, even earlier, maybe a 1 year old who just started learning to walk, okay, is moving toward the edge of a cliff. They're walking and they're moving toward, you know, let's say the family was out hiking or picnicking out in out in nature someplace, and the child broke away from the parents momentarily, and you know the parents were distracted, and the child's moving toward a cliff. It's a terrible situation to even contemplate, but just you know, humor me for a moment.
Sure.
If the child did happen to undertake the action of moving too close to that edge and it slipped off and went over the edge, God forbid, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But if that happened, would the universe care about whether the child didn't understand gravity?
No.
It would simply still be bound according to the conditions that are in effect in nature. Now, that wouldn't mean, now, if we ask the question, right, does that mean that the universe hates that child? Or does that mean that the universe loves that child? Neither one of those questions would even make much sense. Mm-hmm. It simply is a law that exists in nature, and it's non-personal. Gravity is a physical law that exists in nature that is non-personal. It doesn't make a difference whether the being who is moving toward the edge of that cliff on Earth, where there's a 1G condition in place, understands gravity or not. It wouldn't make a difference whether the person was 90 years old and had lived a full life and had understood the laws of physics and mechanics in their lifetime, or whether they were 1 year old and, you know, haven't even developed language skills yet.
Mm-hmm.
The same result is going to happen, and it doesn't make a difference why the person was in the situation. It's a result that is invariable. Because that's what a law is. A law is a binding condition that is inherent to creation, and it's also immutable, meaning that it can't be changed. It's always in effect. And it doesn't make a difference if one understands that it's in effect or not. It doesn't make a difference whether one likes the fact that it's in effect or not. It's in effect, and it has a binding effect upon one's circumstances. That's why it's called a law. That's why it's not called a suggestion or a preference or, you know, a happenstance. Okay, it's a law, and we tend to accept many of us, or most of us, I should say, tend to accept that there are physical laws in creation that are operating, that are immutable. You know, that govern all the laws of, let's say, mechanics, dynamics, meaning motion, thermodynamics, energy, etc. These laws govern everything from the movement of the subatomic particles up to the movement of, you know, physical objects in our everyday life, up to the movement of planets and stars. And we accept that they're governed by immutable laws that we can learn, we can observe, we can discover them, observe them, and understand how they work, and even come up with models mathematically for how they function. And then we're in a better position to be able to predict what will happen in certain physical situations. That most people readily accept, you know. But when it comes to us, when it comes to human beings and our choices that come from the mind, okay, that ultimately generate the reality that we're collectively experiencing here on the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Many people do not want to accept that those choices, those fundamental free will decisions that are made by mental processes by human beings are also governed by law. So in other words, I'm also not saying that we don't have free will. We do have free will to choose our behaviors. What I am saying is we don't have free will to choose our behaviors without consequence. There is always a consequence to the behaviors that we choose in life. And the consequential dynamic, okay, that is being brought to us by creation itself, the intelligent organizing principles that are inherent to creation, okay, that is consciousness. You know, I'm saying that the universe is a conscious entity, and that force, you don't even have to look at it as an entity. I look at it as almost like an impersonal force, but of total intelligence. And it is the governing dynamic that is bringing to us the consequences of our free will decisions. So we have both free will, and then there is a deterministic component to creation. And that's what natural law is. It is that deterministic component that acts as the boundary conditions or the governing dynamic for free will. So in other words, there is a limit to free will. Okay, so people would say, well, then it's not free. Well, if you want to look at it like that, okay, but I don't look at it as the universe is punishing us or is putting us in a prison where we can't just do anything. The boundary conditions that I refer to as natural law are here to promote our best evolutionary development. They're not here to put us in a cage or a prison cell. They're here to guide us and to keep us on the right track so that we can actually go forward and evolve in the most efficient way. That's what natural law is. So I give the soundbite definition, or what you could call working definition, that natural law is the universal, non-man-made, binding and immutable conditions that govern the consequences of behavior. It is a body of universal spiritual laws which act as the governing dynamics for consciousness. That's what natural law ultimately is.
That's a very powerful definition. One thing that's very interesting is, are you familiar with the, I'm blanking on the name, the work where they're talking about the universe as being like a computer simulation?
Yes, I've actually read some scientific papers on that postulate that theory. And, you know, it goes hand in hand with some of the work in different schools of new thought that talk about the universe as being a holographic projection of some type, mm-hmm. that it is a quantum hologram, that it is something that is self-similar across all scales of creation, and mm-hmm. that it is actually governed at the base level by a unified field, which is pure consciousness. I do happen to think that that model is correct, and you know, I don't necessarily go along with a lot of the other new agey type ideas that go with some of those lines of thought. But I think in general, that's what the universe is. It's a construct of consciousness for experience in a physical domain. As such, it is purely a spiritual construct, and the physical aspect of it is what you could call illusory, because it's not actually truly solid. It is actually just energy in a form that seems solid. But I don't think that takes away from the importance of what takes place in that physical domain, because that is what is attempting, through this physical experience, that's how we learn and that's how we grow in consciousness. So the physical domain is no less important than what we would call spirit. It is the same domain. They are one and the same, actually. The spiritual domain is the physical domain, and the physical domain is the spiritual domain. There's really – we have to stop – I think we have to. I mean, somebody can look at it however they want, but I think it would be beneficial for us to stop looking at that in terms of such duality and trying to place more importance of the physical over the spiritual, or the spiritual over the physical, and recognize that they're one and the same.
Yeah, absolutely. One thing also, I mean, I'm also kind of thinking of the work of Amrit, the self-aware universe. We're talking about where the universe basically is experiencing itself by manifesting holographically. The way consciousness experiences itself, you know, Bill Hicks talked a lot about this, where we are the imagination of ourselves, and we are experiencing ourselves subjectively through our imagination of ourselves. I don't remember the exact quote, but it's kind of along the same lines, where, you know, I know you talked about that we're spiritual beings having a human experience, which I think is a very powerful way of saying it, where it's like we have to, we're maybe at this point in our own evolution, we need to be experiencing this so we can grow from it.
Absolutely. You know, and that's why it's important to understand how these dynamics work, because if we want to learn and grow and we don't want to stagnate, and stagnation is essentially equivalent to death, you know, if we don't want to stagnate evolutionarily, we really need to understand how these dynamics function to bring us the experience that we are undergoing in our life. Again, you can look at it in a very simple way. Human beings will say that they want certain conditions to be present in their lives, right? You ask people,
then they're done that, yes.
Yeah, do you want something to be present? Do you want certain things? Human beings have desires for things to be a certain way. It's a very simple concept. We want happiness. We want health. We want freedom. We want peace. We want, you know, prosperity in our lives. And I think people intuitively recognize these conditions aren't just automatic things. They're not automatic processes. They have requirements in order for them to manifest. I think anybody that would just say things just automatically manifest and there's no requirements for them to manifest, they're not really being honest with themselves.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you want to, if you want a house to exist on a certain piece of land where there is no house, there are requirements for that manifesting. You need materials, you need tools, you need effort, you need building skills. There are things that are needed if that's what you want to manifest. Okay? So again, if there's no desire, of course, then there's no requirements, because you don't want anything. But if you want something different than what is, then there's requirements, okay? So specific requirements exist in order for humans to obtain certain conditions that they say they want, particularly if those conditions are not currently present. I think we would all agree with that.
Mm-hmm.
So what if the requirements for obtaining those conditions are not met? If the requirements aren't met, I think it's pretty fair to say that you're not going to manifest those conditions. You're not going to manifest those things if you don't meet those requirements. It doesn't just happen, again, just by magical means, okay, just by wishing it to be so. So then the next question becomes, if we don't have knowledge of those requirements, what do you expect will happen? If the knowledge of the requirements for manifesting the conditions that we say we want isn't present, okay, then the manifestation of the desired conditions becomes impossible, because you have to know what's required. So in other words, let's look at the example of building a house on a piece of empty land. Okay, you have a lot of empty land, and you're going to build a house on it. Well, you have to know what materials are going to be required. You have to know what tools you're going to need. You have to know certain building techniques. If you don't know those things, you're not going to be able to do the things that are required to manifest the condition. So knowledge has to be present first, okay? And this is, people will often hear that things can't happen automatically without knowledge, and they'll react viscerally to that. I actually get this from people in a day-to-day situation. They don't like that that's the case, that that's true. And it's not true just because I'm saying it. If you just go undergo any mental exercise to think about anything that you need to do in life, you have to have knowledge in order to do it. It's not just something that magically happens. Other than like biological processes like breathing and elimination and things like that, these are things that are programmed into our DNA, into our actual living bodily system that just happen. Okay, but the whole point is, when you want a certain condition to manifest in your reality that isn't the norm, that isn't the default condition, okay, then there are requirements, and knowledge is required to understand those requirements, okay? Mm-hmm. If we don't have that knowledge, the manifestation of the desired conditions is impossible. It is not something that can just magically, boom, happen out of the blue and manifest itself. So the next area that we would go into is, what if that knowledge is being held back from people, or not even necessarily held back? What if they are being dissuaded from ever looking into that knowledge? Then they still, again, if they don't get the knowledge of those requirements for manifesting those conditions can't manifest automatically, as if by magic. It just doesn't work that way. So when you tell people that knowledge is required, many of them get angry at that. They don't want that to be the case. They seem to want, human beings seem to want this to magically manifest automatically, out of the blue, just by itself, without work. Because when you tell them knowledge is required, instinctively and in truth, they recognize, well, that means work is required. It's not something that happens automatically. I need to expand effort mentally to take something into my mind and understand it so that I understand how it works and then apply it in an effort of will. So you need knowledge. First of all, you need the desire. That's the care component. Okay, you need the care components in place. You have to desire for something to be different. If you don't desire anything to be different, then you're just content to go along with the default conditions, which are often entropic and chaotic. If you want to create some sort of order, you want something to be manifested in an orderly way or in a way that promotes evolutionary growth, then you have to have that desire for that condition to be present first and foremost. Then you have to actually take in knowledge. So then you were working, you know, we're starting with the heart or the desire aspect, okay? And then we're moving into knowledge. We're taking in the necessary information, the prerequisite information, in order for those conditions to become manifested. Now we have an understanding in place. So we started with the desire to change something. Then we took in the knowledge of the requirements to changing it or to manifesting what we want. And now we understand. Now we have understanding. Now we have to actually move that into the place of action. That's wisdom. Okay, that's what you do with what you know. And if you do something orderly with what you know and you create the desired result, you could say that person is now wise. They understand and they've actually done it. They've acquired wisdom. And that requires will, because that's all about action. So these are the three components of consciousness, you know, worked in with the three things that fulfill them. You know, you have the emotions or the desires, and, you know, that's fulfilled by caring enough to actually go out and get that knowledge. Then you go out, you get that knowledge, now you have intelligence. There is actual intelligently organized data that you have amassed and that you have now come to understand. That's the understanding step. Then you've put that into you put that into practice in your life, and that's your actions, you know, and you do that through the will. And people, they hear that simple model that I've just outlined, and many people, again, they want to react viscerally to it because they don't want it to be that way. They want to think that the world and the conditions that they want present will just magically manifest because the universe loves them so much. And when they hear someone say that that's not really the case, that it's an impersonal dynamic. I'm not trying to say that the Creator hates you or that the Creator loves you. I personally believe the Creator does love us. To come right out and say it. I think that this is the expression. The way that the universe is set up is an expression of pure love, insofar as I see it, because it's saying I love you so much that I'm not going to interfere in your free will decisions, and I'm going to let you create anything you want to create, even if it's horrific. Even if you want to create a prison, go ahead and create that for yourself until you learn that that's probably not a good idea to create that for yourself.
You need the experience so that way you can learn that's not what you want to be creating in the future.
Right, exactly. And that's what this is all about, is becoming a conscious co-creator with the laws of nature, such that we understand what we have the power to change in our daily experience and in our daily lives, and then the conditions that manifest in it, and what we don't have the power to change, which is natural law, which is these governing dynamics that ultimately brings to us the result of what we've chosen through our free will decisions. So we act based on our free will decisions that are mental processes going on in the mind that is in turn based upon our understanding, that is in turn based upon our, or lack thereof, I should say, that is based upon our the knowledge that we've taken in or haven't taken in. Okay, so if you look at this as a simple model, right, human behavior is what creates, through natural law, the present conditions in our lives. So the manifestation, you can look at this as four floors of a building. Okay? Now, remember, we can't build the top floor until we build the first three. And we can't build the third floor until we build the first two. And we can't build the second floor until we've built the first one. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what's on that first floor level? All right? So the top floor level, the fourth floor, is the conditions that have manifested in our life. What we've actually created. Okay? The way human life in on the earth currently is. That's the top floor. That's the generated conditions, or what you could call the manifested reality, very simply. That's the top. Now remember, three things have to happen before that top floor gets put in place. So let's look at what underlies the generated conditions or the manifested reality. Well, behavior determines that. Ultimately, how people act is the determining factor for the generated reality. What happens in our world is determined by how we act. It is determined by how we think and feel, but ultimately it's determined by behavior. Okay, we can think and feel and not actually project that outward through how we behave in the world, and nothing much is going to change in the world if we didn't actually act on how we think and feel. So behavior is what underlies that manifested condition. That's the third floor level. The third floor level in this simple model of a four-story building that I'm laying out here is behavior. Now, human behavior is in turn based upon something. It doesn't just manifest automatically. People behave in a certain way because of other things, namely what's taking place in their mind. So the manifested reality is on the fourth floor. Human behavior is on the third floor. This is what is the foundation for the manifested reality. What, in turn, is the foundation for behavior? Well, the foundation for behavior is what takes place in our mind. Okay? What we think and how we feel, okay, ultimately determine how we act, how we behave. So I would call this second floor level, which is the foundation for behavior, our decision-making processes, or what you could simply call our free will, okay? This is something that directs our free will ultimately to act, because it is the dynamics by which we are choosing behavior. Again, decision-making, and that is based upon the available information or knowledge that we have at our disposal at any given time. Okay, so the first floor level, so again, let's recap here. The manifested reality is the fourth floor. That's what happens in the world. The third floor is human behavior. That's what's ultimately determining what happens. Underneath that, there's decision-making mental processes that are going on in the human mind. That's the second floor. That's what acts as the foundation for behavior. But the foundation for those decision-making processes that lie at the ground level, that act as the foundation, is available information, knowledge about how not only the human psyche works, but how the laws of nature work. If that knowledge, okay, that information constitutes potential knowledge, then we need to actually take it in and understand it to make accurate decision-making processes, okay? And then we need to act on it to make our behavior come into harmony with the laws of nature. And then we'll get either order if we did that properly, or we'll get chaos if we didn't have accurate knowledge, accurate understanding, or will to act upon that. Okay, so But that ground floor level, that first floor level, is the potential knowledge that we can gather through information. We can process it, we can understand it, and we can act upon it. Okay? If that level is polluted or diluted, or if we are dissuaded from even looking into certain aspects of that body of knowledge, then all of the floors above it are going to be built on non-firm foundation. They're going to be built on shaky ground, okay? And they're not going to generate, we're not going to generate the result that we say we want. This is what occultism does. It takes information and it hides it, particularly what I would call dark occultism.
Mm-hmm.
The information is either hidden and it is actually kept away from people in order to create a power differential between certain groups of people. In the modern day, because we live in the information age where information is so readily able to be transmitted at the push of a button, at our fingertips, at our computers, and it is very readily available and largely freely available and freely flowing in the modern day, the tactic for a controller, or what I would call a dark occultist, who occults information, meaning hides it. That's what the word occult means. It does not mean evil or bad. It means, it comes from the Latin occultus, which means hidden. And that's all the word occult means, is hidden, hidden from sight or difficult to see. What the controllers of the modern day world have even switched their tactic to, instead of attempting to hide the information, because let's face it, the floodgates have broken and this information is actually out in the world now. It's not unavailable. In the past, it may have been unavailable and they did their best to keep it that way, you know, and then the printing press came along and that opened some of the floodgates. But now that, you know, we have, you know, mass printing and now the internet, you know, of electronic forms of media, the floodgates are really, the dam has completely broken open, as far as the free flow of information is concerned. So the tactic has been switched, whereas in the past it was all about physically keeping this information from reaching other people's eyes and ears. The tactic now, they can't do that because there's too much information and they can't physically hold it back anymore. Now what they do is they dissuade people from ever looking into this body of knowledge that I'm calling natural law, and the body of knowledge that is simply referred to as the occult, or occulted information, or occulted knowledge. People need to be dissuaded from looking into it because it can't be physically held back from them anymore in the modern day. So this new tactic is tell people that that's all bad, or that that's, you know, something that they don't even need to know. It's either all bad and evil, or it's all nonsense and there's nothing to it, and there's no importance there, so you shouldn't waste your time looking into that when your time could be better spent doing other things. This is the new tactic. It's dissuading instead of actually trying to physically keep hold the information back from people. And that's where people are at when it comes to this knowledge of the occult and natural law. They don't really understand what either one of those things are. They have their own connotative ideas floating around in their mind about what occultism entails. And they have their own connotative definition about what natural law means. Instead of really actually looking into either one of these topics, they hear the word and they hear what they've been told about what those words mean, that the words or phrases, occulted knowledge or natural law, and they have this emotional reaction to it, and it says, well, I already know, somebody told me this is what this is about, and I already know that I don't need to understand that, or there's nothing to that, or that's bad and I shouldn't look into that. They don't actually really know what it is. They don't know what occult information or occulted knowledge is, and they don't know really what natural law is, which is really what the bulk of the work that I've done is attempting to convey to people, that there's this thing called the occult, and it constitutes a body of knowledge, and the two main types of knowledge that it entails is, number one, it entails knowledge of the microcosmic world, meaning the self, the individuated unit of consciousness in creation, what they would call in occult schools the monad, M-O-N-A-D, the monad of consciousness, the individual, in other words, okay? It studies the psyche. It is a study of the human psyche and the different aspects of consciousness that are operating within the individual and the motivations and desires of the being, okay, and the thought processes and, you know, how the being actually operates and works in the world. So it's everything about the self. That's one half of the knowledge of the occult world. And then the second aspect, you could say, is very, very so look, we could actually even look at that as the body of modern science that we would call psychology. You know, that's really an accurate thing to say, is that half of occult knowledge is about human psychology. Okay, it's not so far from the truth. All right, I would say it might entail a little bit more than that because it goes a little even deeper than just modern psychology as a science, but you know, because it's taking, you know, consciousness into consideration and not just looking at the human psyche as some kind of a biological process or something that could be 100% fully analyzed, but it's really delving down into the unseen dynamics that are operating in the mental realm, okay, and then ultimately in the spiritual realm. So to look at as a metaphor or a model, half of the occulted knowledge as psychology would not be that far from being accurate. The second component of occult knowledge is knowledge of the physical laws of creation. In other words, it's the knowledge of the macrocosm, the world of the large things, okay? The laws of nature, the governing dynamics that exist in nature when it comes to not only the tangible physical objects in the world, you know, from the very small all the way up to the very large things like planets and solar systems and galaxies, but it also, the second component of occulted knowledge actually looks into natural law as well. Natural law is the governing dynamics that are operating at a universal level. Again, the first word in the definition that I gave for natural law in the working definition is it is universal. It is everywhere. It is part of the fabric of creation. There's nowhere you can go in this universe to escape from natural law. It exists everywhere. It is universal conditions. So these are the two bodies of knowledge in the occult. In different occult schools, they would call these two general bodies arcana, A-R-C-A-N-A, sometimes pronounced arcana. The two arcana are, again, the microcosm, which would be called the minor arcana, the lesser arcana, but what you could simply call the smaller arcana because it's about the self. It's about the knowledge of the small. Okay, to call it lesser and greater and thinking of that in terms of importance is not accurate. It means about the world of the smaller things or the individuated consciousness. Okay, and then the major arcana would be the laws that govern creation itself, the things that are universal laws that bind how operating conditions in creation work, how things actually operate in the macro domain or the world of the larger things. So that's really what the occult is. And that's that knowledge on the ground floor in the model we were talking about earlier. Okay, that knowledge of how the self works and how the universe works, if that is held back or if people are dissuaded from looking into it, everything that is built atop that, okay? So the things that are built on top of that are decision-making processes because they're going to be contingent upon the knowledge that we have, right? Then on top of that, we make decisions to act in certain ways. Our behaviors are based upon those decision-making processes. And then what manifests in the physical world, the manifested reality, is a result of the aggregate of human behavior. That's why the world is the way that it is. Again, this whole model that I'm laying out here, it explains to people the answer to the question, why? Why That's what's more important to know than the who, what, when, where, and how. Those are all very important to know, and we should be aware of those things, okay, about what's going on in our world. But the most important thing to understand is why are these mm-hmm. conditions manifesting that we say we don't want? And if they're manifesting and we say we don't want them and we're recognizing we want something different to be present, then you have to understand why these things are manifesting and what the necessary requirements are to reversing those conditions and putting different conditions into effect in the world. Those requirements are the understanding of natural law. And without that understanding, okay, those requirements do not get met, and therefore the actual change in the conditions is impossible. And that's a very simple breakdown of what natural law is and how it works. We could then look into the expressions of it if you want to do that as we move forward about what actually gets manifested and why.
Absolutely. I want to, because this is really about natural law and the how it, you know, why it gets manifested, because I want people to really understand what's happening at a deep level, because we can easily get caught up in all the events occurring, you know, like Syria and, you know, what's going on with the banking and blah, blah, blah.
Right.
But one of the things is, because I actually post a lot of things, and I think I when my original email, I actually showed you a post I put in a forum. I like looking at what's going on at the deepest level, because that's where the leverage is. And, you know, and this is why, like, I'm a big fan, for example, of David Icke's work more than, say, Alex Jones, although I have a great respect for Alex Jones. Because we
sure.
have to understand what's going on at the deepest level. I know you're a big fan of David Icke, too.
Sure.
And
yeah,
because
I
that's where
for,
the power is.
Yes, I have respect for both of those gentlemen you just mentioned.
Absolutely.
And, again, I agree that we should be aware of the external things that are taking place. But if we don't understand the why, that's just all going to look like a unsolvable puzzle that we don't grasp what put those conditions into place. Why are they manifesting at all?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. If we get down to the causal level, again, like you said at the top of the show, we do live in a cause and effect universe. All of those things that are going on have already happened. Therefore, they're the effects. It's
they're
like
playing out,
it
yes.
would be like trying to only address the effects would be very equivalent to try to only treat symptoms in a physical ailment. And that's largely what modern medicine has become about. You know, we're treating the symptoms, but we're not looking for the causal factors that led to the manifestation of those symptoms. Well,
absolutely.
What natural law is those causal factors that led to the manifestation of those conditions. Okay? Really, our behavior is the causal factor, and what brings those conditions on is natural law. Okay, so you could look at it as if you eat a lot of bad food, natural law is bringing you the bodily consequences of eating a lot of bad food through disease. That's why we get diseases, okay, because we're not putting the proper nutrients into the body. That's the causal factor, okay? We're putting poisons in and not putting enough nutrients in. You reverse that, you take in less poison and put more nutrients in, it manifests as health, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, people can ask, well, why does it happen that way? Why can't you eat a bunch of sugar and junk foods and manifest health? Natural law is in effect. There are laws governing how the body functions. Well, why can't we act in immoral capacities and do whatever we want to people, even if it violates their rights and harms them, and manifest a world of freedom? Because that's not how natural law functions. When you do a certain thing, like you're putting code into a computer, a certain output happens on the screen. When you do a different thing, another output happens on the screen. We have to learn which function or which code to put in to get a certain outcome. And what we want, what human beings want, is we want to keep writing the bad code, we want to keep doing the bad behavior, and we want magically the output on the screen to be exactly what we envisioned. And
mm-hmm.
what I'm trying to tell people is, sadly, however you want to look at it, it doesn't work that way, okay? And we have to become mature. See, part of this is about being mature and responsible adults. It's about being responsible for what we are creating, because
mm-hmm.
what we're creating doesn't just affect us. It affects everyone around us. It ultimately is part of the aggregate conditions that affect the entire world and everyone in it. So we have to be mature about what we're creating through what we're putting into the universe. And we're putting things into the universe through our behaviors, ultimately. Okay? Yes, we're putting things into the universe through our thoughts. Yes, we're putting things into the universe through our emotions. Okay? But those things are not going to have the physical, tangible, changing impact of action. See, the thoughts and the emotions are having an effect in the world, but ultimately they're having an effect mostly through their influence upon behavior. Mm-hmm. So they're influencing what we do, and that's having the greatest impact in the aggregate of what's manifesting in the world. So if we really start to look at how this process works, okay, it's all about becoming responsible. And this mm-hmm. is what people who want to remain irresponsible and childish don't want. And it's not saying you can never have any fun. You know, I was talking with someone and they were like, I don't think people like your information sometimes because it comes across as very serious. And people think, well, if I learn all of this stuff and dedicate the effort to learning all this, I'll never be able to have any more fun in my life. And that's not the case. It's not like I never have any fun. I could be completely silly sometimes. Ask people who know me, okay? I have fun like anybody else does. I can get silly like anybody else can act silly. When it comes to explaining this information, do I take a serious tact or a serious approach? Yes, I do, because I think it's so important based on where we're at. In other words, having fun and joy and laughing and, you know, that's so great. That's part of what makes us human, and it's these behaviors need to be engaged in. I have to remind myself I have to take some time to do recreational activity because, you know, you'll burn yourself out if you don't. But the point here is, let's say there was a fire happening in your house and you have children. You wouldn't say, let me sit down and play a game of Yahtzee. You wouldn't sit down and say, what's on the tube right now? You know, I'm going to watch some comedy show, some sitcom or something. If a fire was going on in your house, you would say, I need to look out for the people around me that I care about, you know, my family, you know, whatever other living forms of life are in the house, my animals, et cetera. And we need to, you know, determine the seriousness of this. And if we can't, you know, put this out immediately, we need to get out of here because, you know, you're going to be breathing in smoke soon. And if it gets bad enough, flames are going to be licking at you. Okay. That's where we're at in the world, you know, and that's not fear mongering. The world is burning as we speak right now. The house is burning mm-hmm. down. You know, if anybody doesn't recognize that, I don't know really what to tell them. I would just say they're not paying attention. You know,
I know the
so,
feeling.
that's the whole point, is that in a certain situation you won't be acting a certain way most of the time. In that situation, would we describe it as highly irresponsible to go sit down and play a game of solitaire? You know, break out the cards and play some solitaire at the living room table when the house is burning? Of course that would be irresponsible to do, even more particularly if there were children in the house. And, you know, and that's the situation here. And that's what people who say, oh, I just want to have fun. I don't want to look at all that serious stuff. I only want to, you know, focus on what makes me feel good. They're the person who is so irresponsible that they would say, let me go play some games while the house is burning down with children in it.
Yeah.
It's a very applicable analogy.
Yeah.
So let's start to look at what actually these expressions of natural law are. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So again, what we're really talking about here is that these are the causal factors, okay, that determine the effects or the manifested reality in the world. Unless we understand how these causal factors operate, we're in a powerless position to change the effects, because the effects can't be changed from the physical level. They have to be changed from the mental level. That's the causal factor level. Okay? What's going mm-hmm. on in the mind is what's determining behavior, and what underlies what's going on in the mind is the availability of information that we're taking in and processing. Okay? Mm-hmm. So these expressions, okay, there are five of them, and they are there's a positive expression for each and a negative expression for each. Okay, so really, you could say that natural law has 10 overarching expressions or okay. overarching dynamics that are part of it that are going to we need to understand how they operate to understand these causal factors in our that are at work in our lives. So let me just lay out the five expressions, and then we could talk about the 10 aspects of them, the five positive and the five negative. There's the generative polarity. This is what we use. It's the force that we choose to align ourselves with at the beginning of any creative process that is what we use to create what we're going to create, the outcome, in other words. We're using a force, ultimately. So there's a force. You could call this the generative force. That might even be a better word, but it's a polarized force. Okay, mm-hmm. There is polarity inherent in the universe. I mean, you know, for people to say, oh, there's no such thing as duality, okay, you could see that everything is just, you know, a manifestation of one aspect of a polarity or its absence. That's one way of reconciling a duality. But to say that the polarity doesn't exist at all in the physical domain is not true. For example, people will say, well, fear is an illusion. Yes, it is. But does it exist? Are people experiencing it? It exists in this dimension, in this reality. People are experiencing it. Okay?
Yeah.
Is that an illusion?
It might
illusory?
Also be an illusion, but it exists here, in this illusion.
That's right.
Basically.
Where you are at, it exists. It has an effect. It operates. So, again, that's we can't confuse the ultimate level of reality with the level that we are experiencing here in the now. Here and now. Okay, that's why people aren't creating what they want to create, because they're not being here and they're not being in the now, right? Mm-hmm. Their mind is somewhere else and their mind is some time else, okay? Instead of bringing it here now and actually learning about the requirements for doing something about what's going on in the here and now and then actually doing that through an act of will. People don't want to hear that. They want to hear some portal is going to open any moment, right next to, you know, right on your street where you're living, you're going to be able to walk through that and go into another world where all of this isn't happening. The whole idea of the rapture, okay? It's just another variant of the rapture. We're going to ascend to another dimension of being and all the consciousness, the individual units of consciousness that don't get what's really going on. They're going to remain here on the physical earth. Well, this is all New Age mumbo jumbo, and it's all stuff that's all wishful thinking. It's just like, you know, well, put your head down and do everything that the master tells you to do, you know, in this reality, in this lifetime, and then you'll magically be gifted with a wonderful life in some hereafter, in some afterlife, okay, which is, you know, what the controllers told people in, you know, the ancient world to get them hooked onto these religious notions of, you know, a promise of an afterlife, and therefore they would accept their life of slavery and misery in this life. Okay, we have to learn to be here now, be in the present moment and look at what's going on where we are in this place instead of concerning ourselves with other dimensions and other times. Okay, I'm not saying none of that exists, but that's not where we're operating. We're operating on Earth at this moment. That's where we have to start from. So, you know, go back to what we were talking about. This is about polarity. Right, and polarity does exist here in this dimension where we're operating. So the first expression of natural law is what I call a generative polarity. So the word generative, it comes from the Latin genere. The verb genere in Latin means to create. So this, you could call this the creative polarity, the polarity that we use to create the outcome. Okay, so that's the first expression of natural law. The second expression I call, and again, we'll get into what the positive and negative aspects are in a moment, but mm-hmm. the second expression is the initiating expression or the initiatory expression, however you want to word it. You could just say how it starts, the starting expression, okay? when you choose one of the creative polarities to work with, something manifests almost right away, okay? You are going to go into a mode of consciousness based on what you've chosen with that creative polarity. So that's the starting condition. You know, you could say, here's how it starts out of the gates. That's how you want to look at the initiatory expression of natural law. So we have the creative polarity. That's the force that we work with. Then something happens when we start using that. That's the starting expression. A simple, easy term of putting it is the starting expression. Okay? Then we have, as the starting expression continues to work, we have the internalized expression. This is the thing that's going on within the human being, or I would say it's what ultimately gets created or generated within the individual unit of consciousness, the individual, the monad again, okay? This is what happens inside of us, right? So that's the internal expression for natural law. Then, of course, if there's an internal expression, there's going to be an external expression, okay? So that's what happens in the aggregate, meaning in the total. Okay, that's what happens in society, in any given society where there are individuals. Okay, so we have an internalized expression and then an externalized expression. All right, and then we have the ending manifestation, the ending expression. You could look at this as the opposite of the initiating expression. Okay, something starts and then something ultimately gets made. All right, so this is going to be based on, this is the result that we create based on all the other things. All right, that we just went through, the creative polarity that we chose, the starting expression, the internal and external expressions, and then something gets manifested. So this is what I simply call the manifestation. You could call it the end expression, okay, or the result, either any way you want to look at it. Okay, these are just terms that we apply to help understand the model better. All right. So this is the manifested result that we create based on the creative polarity that we chose. So let's look at each one of these dynamics. Again, I went through five dynamics, right? And they each have a positive expression and a negative expression. Or you could look at the positive and negative sides or poles in this model as here's the things that we could do that will get us what we say we want. And here's the things that we could choose that will never get us the things that we say we want. That's the simplest way of looking at this is if you look at the positive expressions for these five dynamics as here are the requirements to obtaining what we want. And the negative expressions are if we do these things or let these things continue to be done, then it's impossible to obtain what we want, to what we say we want. That cannot be done. Okay, mm-hmm. So let's look at these positive and negative expressions. The positive creative polarity is consciousness, or simply what I would term love. It is the love dynamic. Now, this doesn't mean attachment love. It doesn't mean romantic love. It doesn't even mean familial love. That's not what we're talking about. Those things exist and are very important. I wouldn't say love as attachment is important, but it's a way of seeing this term, this energy, and that's I'm trying to set aside emotional love from what I'm talking about here, and not to say that this isn't something that has to do with the emotions. It very much does. Okay. But what I'm talking about here is a force that is existing in the universe and within us that is the force that helps consciousness to expand and grow. So in other words, you can look at it as, look at this whole thing as a seed, right? And then there is a nurturing dynamic for the seed, okay? In other words, the conditions that we put it in. Okay, we put it in good soil, fertile soil with lots of nutrients, and then we give it water and sunlight, and then it grows into what we expect it to be. Okay, maybe a plant that produces food. Okay, and the fruits of that plant then we take in, and then there's seeds, and then the process can continue. Okay, this base dynamic, the starting point, the generative polarity or the creative polarity is a force that we use to create. So you could say it's the seed that we're planting. And what love has to be looked at as, to understand how I'm using it in this model, is it's not the love between a mother and a daughter, or a mother and a son, or it's not the love between a wife and a husband. It's not the love between a brother and a sister. It's the force that helps one to open their mind and heart, most of all their heart, and take in the truth, take in how things really are. Look at what is and see it without filters, and see it for what it is and then accept it, take it in. That's what I'm calling love, or the expansive force of consciousness. Okay? Again, when I talk about consciousness, I'm not talking about just physical consciousness. We're talking about the ability to recognize what's going on. That's what consciousness is. If you're conscious of something, you're awake, you're aware, you recognize it, you understand it. If you're unconscious, you're ignorant. You're not paying attention. You don't know what's going on. That's what we're talking about here, the ability to recognize what's taking place. Or in other words, the ability to recognize truth from what's not taking place, which would be falsehood. The ability to recognize what is happening versus what is not happening. Okay? So that's all that I'm talking about here when I talk about love. I feel it's important to demystify this concept, because people have this notion of what love is about or what it is. And again, when we're talking about it here, using this word in this model for natural law, those other connotations need to be set to the side. I'm not saying that the concept of love cannot apply to those connotations of emotional love between members of a family or friends, or, you know, romantic relationships. Of course love can apply to those, that concept. I'm saying that concept is not included in this definition that I'm giving for the term love, as the expansive force of consciousness, when we're looking at it as the generative polarity that we create with through natural law. Okay? So understand that definition. So the negative aspect of the generative polarity is the opposite of love. So if love is the force which expands consciousness and helps it to grow and helps us to take open ourselves up to take in truth, okay? So it is the opposite of consciousness. You could simply call the negative generative polarity unconsciousness. Or you could go a little deeper than that and look at what is the force that propagates unconsciousness. What is the force that if it's present within the individual consciousness, makes that being not want to learn, not want to know, not want to grow? And I think if you really just simply think about that for a moment, you know that the answer is fear. Fear is the force that shuts down human consciousness, that makes someone afraid to open themselves up to take in the truth, because often, based on where we're at, the truth might not be so pleasant. And I'm not saying that the truth is pleasant. The truth is pretty horrible, actually. You know, you have to learn to accept the truth as horrible as it is if you want to be conscious of what's going on, and then put yourself in an empowered position to be able to change what's going on. So fear is this second polarity. It's the negative polarity that we start using to create with. And unfortunately, that's the dominating polarity in our world. If that wasn't the dominating polarity in the world over love, the world wouldn't be the way it is. The world would be a much better place. Most people choose this starting force. They choose this polarity to create with, and they do that in an unconscious way. You know, fear is what they're already in that makes them unconscious, and all their other behaviors are basically based upon that. Fear of punishment. Fear of what might or might not happen, okay? Fear of the consequences for taking or not taking a certain action. If this is the level that we're operating from, only bad things can result. Only chaotic things can result that we don't want. So those are the generative polarities. in every single decision-making process that we make and then put into reality through our behavior, we are choosing between one of those polarities. As a matter of fact, it is an impossibility to do any action without it being based upon one of those polarities. Every single action that is ever taken will either be taken based on the positive generative polarity or the negative generative polarity, either love or fear.
It's
so
interesting you should –
yes.
Oh, sorry.
No, go right ahead.
I was going to say Marianne Williamson, I think, in A Course in Miracles talks about – I remember listening to a Tony Robbins interview she did – where everything is, where all our responses are based either it's a cry for help or it's a loving response. It's the same idea.
Right. Exactly. Very accurate, I would say. You know, and one of them implies responsibility and consciousness being present, and the other implies that those things are absent. You know,
mm-hmm.
So that's what we're talking about here. Love is the force that opens us up to the acceptance of truth, expands consciousness, helps us to grow, and allows us to take personal responsibility for our own actions, okay? And to understand, most of all, the difference between right and wrong. That's the most important thing when it comes to natural law. You know, lest we forget, let me just state it out in the open, this is all about morality. This
mm-hmm.
is all about understanding the difference between right and wrong, because there
mm-hmm.
can be no freedom. You cannot create a society that is based in freedom if you're not basing your behavior in morality.
Mm-hmm.
According to moral decision-making processes, once you know the objective difference between right and wrong and then choose the right action over the wrong action. This is part of natural law. It's a dynamic that I refer to as the law of freedom. The law of
mm-hmm.
freedom states that freedom is directly proportional to morality. The amount of freedom that exists in any given society or on the earth in general is going to be directly proportional to the amount of moral behavior that is being conducted within that society or on that planet. So
mm-hmm.
as morality increases, more freedom results. Freedom increases.
Mm-hmm.
As morality declines, freedom declines. And we go into
we're seeing that big time right now.
That's right. And that's why. That's the answer to the why. This is what many people never make this connection. They never get to the point where they understand the reason that freedom is on the wane is because morality has been on the wane for a
mm-hmm.
very long time.
Sure.
Okay, unless we build up morality again, we cannot build a free society. And
absolutely.
Unfortunately, the controllers are turning our whole society into a satanic society that is based on satanic values of
absolutely.
Moral relativism. The idea that there's no such thing as the difference between right and wrong. It's wherever we say it is. So let's continue with the expressions, and we'll finish laying out these five basic expressions that have both a positive and a negative aspect. The
mm-hmm.
starting expression, you know, after we've chosen either love or fear, again, we're either open to the truth or we're closed to the truth, right? So if we're open to the truth, we're going to accept it, we're going to take it in, and then what are we going to have? We're going to have knowledge, and we know what's going on. We have knowledge in general about any given topic in particular, okay? Now, that could have to do with the self, that could have to do with what's going on in the world. We'll see how knowledge leads to a certain condition internally, and it leads to a certain condition externally in the society, all right? So knowledge is the starting expression. This is how it starts once we make the decision to either open ourselves up, which is be in the consciousness of love, or to close ourselves down, which is to be in the unconscious state of fear. So if we're in the unconscious state of fear, the negative starting or initiatory expression is ignorance. That's the opposite of knowledge. It means you don't know. You've refused the truth. Now, notice I didn't say nescience there, which is another way of saying you don't know. Nescience means you don't know because the knowledge wasn't present, and you had no recourse. You had no availability of knowledge so that you could come to understanding. Ignorance, or as I like to call it, ignorance, means you willfully ignored truth. It is the active refusal of truth. You're refusing to accept what is.
Mm-hmm.
And that's done through fear. So fear is operating. It's closing down the person, and they're saying, I don't want to know. I refuse to take that information in. I refuse to learn that, and therefore they come to a place of ignorance. Okay, so that's the negative starting expression. Now, once we're in a position of either knowledge or ignorance, something happens inside of us. All right? We understand, we either understand about ourselves or we completely don't understand about ourselves. Now, the condition by which we fully understand ourselves and we've come to know ourselves, right? That's the internal expression of natural law. So we were in love-based consciousness, meaning we were open-minded and open-hearted. We took in the truth through knowledge, through information. Now we've come to an understanding inside of ourselves. That's called sovereignty. Sovereignty is the ultimate expression of self-knowledge, because that's what we really are. We are sovereign beings. Sovereign, the word sovereign also comes from Latin. Sovereign, the first part of it, S-O-V-E-R, sover, comes from the Latin super, okay? Super in Latin means above or beyond. And then the word reign in sovereign, R-E-I-G-N, comes from the Latin regnum. Regnum, the Latin noun, means rulership or control, okay? So a sovereign, putting it together, above, super, regnum, rule or control. Above rulership or control. Okay, it doesn't mean above rules, because natural law are rules that are always in effect, and we're not ever above those. Those are the boundary conditions and the governing dynamics for the whole universe. We are above externally imposed rulership or control by any other physical beings in this world. That's what sovereign means. It means no one is our owner, no one is our master, we are not a slave. So when you put the term together, sovereign, sover, reign, or super regnum, it means above or beyond the rulership or control of another. Well, anyone that is above the rulership or control of another is simply free. That's what sovereignty ultimately means. It's another way of saying freedom, that one is free. For me to say that I am sovereign, it means literally I am above the external control of another, or meaning I am not a slave. I am a free being. I am not externally owned by another being. And that is true. That is not an opinion. That is not a speculation. That is an eternal truth that no beings in this dimension are actually really owned by any other beings. Somebody can believe that they own somebody else and then act upon that belief, and then there could be an acceptance of that erroneous belief, but it's never valid, it's never legitimate. It's always a false claim, and the acceptance of that claim is always based in a lack of truth, a lack of understanding of truth. The truth is there's every being in the universe is a sovereign being. No one is the rightful property of another being. That's the truth. So we're all sovereign, it's just we don't. Most of us don't know that. We believe that there's legitimacy to slavery and that certain beings are owned by other beings. Okay, so the internal expression, or what happens inside of us, is either we recognize our inherent sovereignty or we don't. So if we recognize our inherent sovereignty, we're empowered. We know the truth about us, about what we really are, that we are sovereign beings. And if we don't recognize that, that was because we were in a state of fear and ignorance. And then what results in our lives is a lack of understanding of the self. Okay? So a lack of understanding of what's going on inside of you. What's happening, if you said to somebody, just tell me this condition in one word. I have no idea what is going on with me. The best definition in one word that you could give for that is confusion. I have no idea what's going on. I'm confused. I don't know anything that's going on inside myself. I don't know who I am. I don't know why the things are going on that are going on. That's confusion. And that happens as a result of, one, being in fear, and two, since you were in fear and your mind and heart was shut down, you refused the truth and therefore you manifested ignorance. Therefore, that ignorance led to total confusion in your life because you don't have enough knowledge to recognize what's going on within you or around you. Okay, so now if we look at these two states, total self-knowledge of who you really are, that's sovereignty, and total lack of self-knowledge, that's confusion. I look at these in terms of whether they are whether the person is in rulership of themselves or whether there is no rulership within the self. Okay, self-rulership is very important. Self-ownership, self-mastery, self-rulership. We have to be our own masters. We have to master the self. We have to rule the kingdom of the self by aligning our thoughts, our emotions, and our actions such that we become a being that as we think, so we feel, so we act, and there is no internal contradiction between those three aspects of our consciousness. So I call sovereignty in this internal expression of natural law, internal monarchy. Now, that's a strange term. Many people would never have heard that. But what that means is a monarch is one ruler. Mon means one, and arch is the root for ruler, from archon in Greek. Mm. So one internal ruler, internal monarchy, that means my individuated consciousness, the monad, that is my consciousness inhabiting this physical vehicle that I call my physical body, okay? I rule it. My consciousness rules that kingdom, which is the self, okay? No one else rules it. No one else owns me. No one else owns my physical body. No one else owns my mind. I own those things. I am the owner and ruler of those things, okay? That's called internal monarchy. There's only one ruler, only one master of this house. And that's me. The opposite of that condition is there's no ruler at home. Okay? No one is taking the reins of the self. No one is mastering the self, the consciousness, the individuated consciousness. Okay? That's when there is anarchy present in the house, okay, of self, in the kingdom of self. And again, anarchy means the absence of a ruler. Okay, which is a great thing if it's external, but if it's internal, it's a terrible thing. We need to have the internal ruler. We need to master the self. We need to own ourselves. We need to rule ourselves. We need to have self-control. We need to have self-discipline. We need to have self-respect. We need to have self-love. All of those things come from the recognition of our own sovereignty and then being willing to extend that sovereignty to others as well. So confusion, this negative internal expression for natural law, I call internal anarchy, meaning inside there's no ruler home, and that's a very bad condition, okay? That will lead to being in complete oppositional consciousness such that your thoughts, emotions, and actions are not aligned. They're not on the same page. They're all in duality and opposition to each other. And that will lead to chaotic results in one's life and in society. So that's the internal expressions. Let's look at the external. So remember, the state of the force that we use is either love or fear. These manifest initially as either the acceptance of truth and thus knowledge, or the rejection of truth, the refusal of truth, thus ignorance. And then inside of us, we either recognize that we're sovereign and we rule the self, we take self-control, or we don't recognize anything about ourselves and we exist in total confusion, and inside of our own consciousness, there's anarchy. What happens then in the external domain when these conditions are present? Well, in the external domain, if expanded consciousness, the force that expands consciousness called love is present and we're conscious, and then we take in knowledge, we accept truth, and then we've developed knowledge. We know about the self, so we recognize our own sovereignty and we take rulership of the self and responsibility for what we create. What's going to manifest in the external world? In the society at large, there's a condition that will manifest. It's this little thing called freedom. freedom will manifest, because, most of all, because we have the knowledge of right and wrong in our possession. And our behavior is going to be based upon the fact that we're all sovereign and that no one controls anybody else, and therefore we're not going to exercise any coercive behavior against our fellow human beings and even animals. Okay? We are going to allow freedom to exist because we recognize that's everyone's individual birthright called sovereignty. That our rights are not created by us, that they're a birthright of creation itself, and that we have them as a result of our existence in the creation. Okay? So if we recognize all of this, freedom will result in the seemingly external domain, which is actually generated from the internal domain of consciousness. All right? So freedom is what I would call external anarchy. True freedom means there's no rulers. There's nobody ruling anybody else. That's all freedom means, is that no one is claiming, I'm an authority, I own other people, they're my subjects or my slaves, and they have to do what I say. That's called slavery, okay, which is what government and authority and all that other nonsense is. All right? That's called people who erroneously believe that they are somehow inherently the master of other beings, and they're not. No one is. So, and that's what anarchy means, the absence of a master. An means the absence of, as a Greek prefix, and archon means ruler or master. Okay? So anarchy means the absence of a ruler or a master. And if we make that external, it means the absence of an external ruler or master, meaning no one outside of myself is my master or my ruler, meaning I am not a slave. That's what freedom is. Freedom means no one else is your master. Okay? And that's what we need to strive to create in the external domain, true freedom, which is true external anarchy. And that's not chaos. That's real freedom. Chaos is the exact opposite of that. Chaos is when we won't allow that condition to manifest and there's total control everywhere, which is what we have now. And again, that's the negative expression in the external aspect. The negative external expression, of course, is the opposite of freedom. That's when there's fear and unconsciousness present. That's what we're creating with. That's the force that we're creating with, the generative polarity we're creating with. Ignorance results because we have refused truth. We're not open to truth. Internal confusion results, okay, within the being. We don't know who we are. And then ultimately, we're striving to try to control things in the external domain because there's all this chaos happening within ourselves. And therefore, then there's erratic behavior and people doing things that are against the rights and freedoms of the individual. And therefore, we're trying to seek external control over all that chaos. And we want to try to control people. And we don't understand. You can't solve the problem by externally controlling. Okay, all you're doing is putting more negativity and fear into the world, because then the motivation for behavior goes back to fear of punishment, because these controls are in place and it's an endless feedback loop. And all you do is you create more ignorance because people aren't learning why they should act a certain way. You create more confusion. People still don't know who they are, that they're sovereign beings, and they think that there's legitimacy to all this control, and then they want more control. And it creates an endless feedback loop, and it builds and builds and builds, and that's where we're at. We're stuck in that feedback loop. We think we're ever going to be able to cross this line and somehow create order through control. And I keep trying to explain to people that's as utterly ridiculous as saying, I'm going to treat these burns with a blowtorch. That's how ridiculous that is. It is the amount of madness that needs to be present in the human psyche to think that you can create freedom through control, or that you can create order through control, is such insanity that it would be like somebody was in a fire in a house and they got a third-degree burn on their arm. And you said, come here, let me help you with that. And you took out an acetylene torch, lit it up, and put it right on the burn wound. That's how insane and mad it is to think that you can create any kind of order through control. Okay, it's an impossibility to do it that way. Cannot be done. Okay, so these are the external expressions. Now, there's one last expression, again, the ending expression, as we talked about. That's the manifestation. All right? If we started with the generative polarity of love, the positive expression, again, we can only create more consciousness because love is the force that expands consciousness. We can only then open ourselves up to truth and gain knowledge, ultimately gain knowledge of self, to develop our understanding of our own inherent sovereignty. And then if most people do go through that process and do that work upon themselves, then there will be true freedom in society as a whole. That then manifests, the ending manifestation is a world that is orderly. Order has resulted. That's the positive manifested result in natural law. So, and that only works in one direction. You can only create order through freedom, which can only be created through internal recognition of sovereignty, which can only be created through knowledge, which can only be created through consciousness or the expansive force of consciousness, which is love. It cannot be done any other way. I'm not just saying that it does occasionally happen in this progression. What I'm trying to explain to people is that it can only happen in that progression. In other words, if you want order or manifested goodness in your reality, you must create that through freedom, which must be created through an understanding of sovereignty, which must be created through an acceptance of truth, which must be created through the expansive force of consciousness, which is love energy. And again, where morality comes into the picture here is in that second step called knowledge, the acceptance of truth, because there is such a thing as the truth about the difference between right and wrong. They're not relative things, and they are not things that are based on perceptions. They are based in reality, based on whether an action creates harm to another being or an action does not create harm to another being. If an action creates harm to another being, it is a wrongdoing. It is a transgression against natural law, and therefore we shouldn't take those behaviors. So those behaviors are essentially all forms of theft: murder, assault, rape, theft, trespass, coercion. Okay? If we do those things, we are harming another living being, therefore we shouldn't engage in those behaviors because they are not based in truth, okay? And therefore they're not conducive to respecting the sovereignty of another being, creating a world that is based in freedom, and ultimately manifesting order, all right? So if we look at the negative expression of the manifestation, the manifested result, it's the opposite of order. It's chaos, of course. Or what we would call manifested evil, evil manifesting in our lives, what we would call evil. And I would say it actually is evil. You know, there is really good and evil, and that's what this is. It's the condition that manifests that we don't want to be present, and that we, most of us who have a healthy functioning brain in some capacity, inherently recognize as something we don't want in our lives. We don't want evil present. We don't want chaos present. This is the negative result. And it only manifests if we follow the progression, okay, of the negative expressions of natural law, which is fear. That's the polarity we chose to create with it first. Through our fear, we refused the truth, especially the truth about the difference between right and wrong, okay? And we went into a state of ignorance, thinking we could just ignore all of the truth and ignore morality and somehow create what we want and get what we want out of the situation. We're in a state of internal confusion, not really knowing who we are or how we work, how we operate, and that's internal anarchy. And then we then cried out for, you know, in our irresponsible way, cried out for, we need to put external controls in place in society, and we're essentially building a prison society because we didn't want to do all the work to expand our consciousness, take in and accept the truth, develop knowledge and understanding, and really recognize who we are and work upon ourselves. We don't want any of that present. We just want to externally control others. Okay, so as a result of all of that fear, ignorance, confusion, and control, we have a world that's based in chaos. And I would say that's where we're at now. So if we're at that negative manifestation right now. There are requirements to turning it around. In other words, we need certain knowledge. So that really the starting expression in the world is knowledge. It's understanding how things work. The only way you can get to the acceptance of truth in order to take in knowledge is to develop love, which is expelling fear. In other words, really the bridge to get over to the other side is courage, because courage is the force that love works through to dispel fear. And as long as there is this illusion present called fear, we're only ever creating ignorance, confusion, control, and ultimately chaos. If we, through love, develop courage to look at what is, instead of saying, I don't need to know that, or that's bad, or, you know, I don't want to know because it's so dark and scary right now, okay? As long as we stay in that fear, we can never develop the knowledge that we need through the opening of our consciousness, which is love, which is done through love. We can never develop the knowledge of the requirements to reversing the condition, okay? And natural law is those requirements. And this is the progression. It only works from love through knowledge, sovereignty, and freedom to order. And it only works through fear, okay? If we start with that expression, we can only ever create ignorance, internal confusion, external control, and chaos in the world. That's how natural law actually functions unwaveringly, invariably in our lives. And again, the knowledge that we need to really accept and take in that we're talking about here is self-knowledge and, in other words, how the psyche works, and the knowledge of the seemingly external conditions or domain that we call the physical universe, but mostly that second part of the knowledge about the knowledge of the macrocosm or the universe contains the knowledge of the difference between right and wrong. And then once we have that, which is what conscience is the knowledge of the difference between right and wrong, we can then exercise it through our behaviors. And then when we exercise it, we're choosing the right action over the wrong action if we're truly exercising our conscience based upon knowledge of between right and wrong. When we put behaviors into the world that are moral, we're creating more freedom according to the law of freedom. As morality and moral behavior increases, freedom increases. As morality and moral behavior decline, okay, so in other words, if there's more ignorance of the difference between right and wrong, and therefore behaviors are going to be totally erratic, and we're going to choose wrong over right more of the time than not, the external conditions are going to go deeper and deeper into control. And again, the universe is going to intelligently organize this result. It is going to, in other words, the universe is like a huge mirror that is reflecting back to us that which we put into it. And it's doing it impersonally. It is not a personal thing. The universe isn't saying, hey, you were fearful, you remained unconscious because you refused to take in the truth. And in that state of ignorance and internal confusion, you chose wrong action over right action. Therefore, I hate you, and I'm going to punish you. That's not what the universe is saying. The universe doesn't have any capacity to say, I hate you, to an individuated unit of consciousness. All the universe is doing is it's saying, this is what you've chose. It's like pushing a button on your keyboard, okay, or programming some code into the computer, okay, and you then hit the execute button, and I'm running the result for you. I'm giving you what you programmed in. That's it. It's a totally, it is no more, universe takes no different of a role regarding this dynamic than a computer takes when you put in code, hit the execute button. Does the computer say, you messed up on that code and I hate you, and here, let me spit out some garbage? No, it's a automatic processing that takes place in a purely logical way in the processor. and it says, here's what my programmer punched into me. I'm going to give him what he punched into me. That's all I'm charged to do. The computer has no consciousness necessarily of its own, okay? It's, and I'm not saying the universe isn't conscious by that model. What I'm saying is the universe is totally conscious, but it's there are boundary conditions that make it operate in an impersonal way, like a computer, okay? Consciousness is what organized that whole dynamic and put it into effect. This is why it's in effect. Again, it's in effect because this is the best method for helping us to learn what not to do. It'll give us what we want if we put the right code into it. And if we put the wrong code into it, it'll say, that's not how you get what you want. Here's what this gives you. It gives you what you say you don't want. And you have to make the conscious recognition. You have to make the connection and say, here's what I put in. Here's what I got out. Is that what I wanted? Yes. Well, then I put in the right code through behavior. I got out something I didn't want. Well, why is that? Well, because you couldn't possibly have put in the right code through behavior, meaning you have to go back and check what's the behavior based upon. Well, the behavior is based upon decision-making processes. Okay, what's decision-making processes based upon? The decision-making processes are based upon either knowledge or ignorance. Okay, well, then I have to go back and either learn something new or I have to abandon what I think I know now and change and do something different. We've all heard the phrase, insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result. And again, that's because the person doesn't want to go back, check what they've taken in, and verify, is that valid? Is there validity and truth to this, or have I taken in a lie? Have I taken in this postulate or this axiom, and it can't possibly get me what I want if I continue to act upon it? And that's what we've done. We've taken in flawed fundamental axioms regarding how we should behave in the world. And we think if we continue to do this based on this axiom, this fundamental idea that we believe to be true, somehow we'll eventually get what we want. When the axiom itself is flawed and all it can ever generate for us is what we don't want, only when we go back and abandon that axiom and we take in new information and we adjust our perception and we adjust our model and we say, no, here's what needs to be done. Here's how we, you know, need to adjust our behavior, and then we'll get what we say we want. Only when we do that can that manifestation come about, which would create order instead of the chaos that we're currently generating. And again, that all goes back to whether our decision-making processes result in behaviors that are based in morality or not, are based in either right or wrong behavior. And that is based in knowledge. Ultimately, we have to have the knowledge of the objective difference between right and wrong. And again, we don't say right and wrong, meaning both correct and moral. Right means both correct and moral, and conversely, wrong means both incorrect and immoral. That's not accidental. That's not for no reason. You know, to say the word right, 2 + 2 = 4, yes, you're right, you are correct. That is based in truth. And to say right, that action that you did was a right. You had the right to do that because it was moral. It didn't hurt anybody else. That's because that way, because it is correct, because it is true. There's no accident in the language that we've chosen, that right, the word right means both moral and correct. Moral, mm-hmm. that it is in harmony with natural law, and correct, that it is based in truth. That's not an accident. No more than it is an accident that the word wrong means both incorrect, not based in truth, and immoral, meaning in opposition to natural law, based in a behavior that causes harm. No accident in the language. So that knowledge is what has to be developed and understood, the objective knowledge of the difference, the objective difference between right and wrong. They're not subjective. They're not relative. They are objective and absolute. And again, many people don't want to hear that. They don't want to hear that we're getting what we're getting because we want to get to make up the difference between right and wrong and then choose between it based on our perceptions. You know, many people find homosexuality repugnant to them, and that's their free will choice. Okay, but the actual behavior of engaging in some form of a sexual relationship with a member of the same sex is either consensual, meaning it was agreed upon by both parties, or that act would be non-consensual, in which it would be called rape, in which case it would be called rape, which is equally morally wrong when it's done with the same sex as when it's done with the opposite sex. Okay, mm-hmm. But consensual sexual behavior would equally be a right if it is done with the same sex or the opposite sex, as long as it is consensual and agreed upon by both parties. So when people want to try to twist right and wrong into saying, well, because that's objectionable to me and repugnant to me because I have a distaste or a dislike for this particular kind of behavior, that means it's morally wrong. No, it doesn't mean it's morally wrong. Okay? I am personally heterosexual, but that doesn't mean that I think that homosexuality is morally wrong. I might find it repugnant for myself and not engage in that behavior, but that's somebody else's preference. It doesn't have to do with hurting somebody. Rape, whether it is done with members of the same sex or the opposite sex, is always morally wrong because it's based in coercion and it's based in the theft of someone else's free will to sexually associate who they want. And on top of that, it's a very violent behavior, physical violent behavior. So this is what people have to understand, that repugnance for a particular thing doesn't necessarily make it immoral, no more than smoking. I personally find smoking totally repugnant. Okay, that doesn't mean it's morally wrong for somebody to smoke tobacco if they want. Somebody might find, I personally find injecting heroin, I find injecting anything into the bloodstream, by injecting it into a vein, I find that very repugnant. And mm-hmm. I don't engage in behavior like that. Does that mean I think somebody else doesn't have the right to put what they want into their own body through whatever delivery system they choose, if it's their own personal choice and they're not forcing it upon anybody else? No, of course that's their right to do so. Yes.
No, those are very good examples. We got about 15 minutes left, and there's one other point I wanted to go over, and I think you kind of hinted on it. I kind of wanted to go over this, and that is you talk about this being an apathetic process. And that's where it's like basically by removing wrong knowledge, I would take that to mean removing the barriers, removing the fears, removing the limiting beliefs, that this is kind of the foundation of building building freedom and building, a really high-quality life. I mean, I'd like you to comment on that, if you could.
Sure. What's being referred to here is the process called apophysis. And this is a word many people will not have heard. I highly encourage people to check out this concept. It's a method of reasoning. Okay, it's called apophysis, and I'll spell that for the listening audience. It's A-P-O-P-H-A-S-I-S, apophysis. Okay, some people simply refer to it as apophatic inquiry, okay, or apophatic learning. It's A-P-O-P-H-A-T-I-C, apophatic inquiry, all right? I call this simply describing what something is by explaining what it's not. That's a simple definition, okay? You're going to take away everything that is not something from an available body of description, okay, of descriptions. And what's left is what that thing is about, is what it is. So in other words, the removal of the negative, or you're working through negation to remove things that aren't true. Some people have called this deductive reasoning. You're taking away what is false. So the process of truth discovery is very much like this. It's about filtering out all the things that aren't the case, that aren't true. And you could do this through direct interaction which is gnosis, okay, directly experiencing something, direct experience. You could do this through taking in observations based on, you know, a collected body of knowledge and you know, weeding it down and, you know, comparing things and throwing out what you can filter out as false. And you have to do this through observation and testing, okay? And you're getting down to what something really is by saying no over and over again. No, that's not what it is. No, that's not what it is. No, that's not how it works. And it, that filtration process, it's a process of purification. It was the preferred learning method in the ancient mystery schools and in the alchemical tradition as well. Again, the alchemical tradition was always all about purification, of removing impurities to get down to the heart of the matter of what is really important. Instead of, you know, the distraction through all the impurities. That's what the apophatic process is. It's saying, I need to get down to who I am. So I need to get all these things, all these illusions and suppositions about who I am that aren't true and get rid of them. And then through that process, I'm purifying the self through this apophatic process. It's weeding out the untrue. It's weeding out the false to get to the true, to get to the pure. You know, great. It's probably one of the best things that helped me to awaken is to go through the apophatic inquiry process regarding any particular aspect of what's going on in the world to say, you know, is this true? No, then we need to get it out of the way. We need to set it to the side and filter it out, and then we're going to be left with the heart of the matter. And through that process, and I was almost, I guess you could say forced, but it's more like my life became so uncomfortable through suffering that I went down this path because it was the only thing that was left was that or the grave. And so I chose to go down that path of apophatic inquiry and to remove all these false fundamental axioms. And what that left me with was an understanding of natural law. Natural law is very much understood best through this apophatic process. And what you have to use it for is to understand what a right is. If you use apophysis to understand what a right is, that's the best way of understanding a right. What a right really is what it is not. It is not a wrongdoing. The opposite of a right is a wrongdoing. So the best way to understand what a right is to understand what it's not by understanding what wrongdoings are. If you understand what all the different forms of wrongdoings ultimately are, then you fully recognize that a right is any action which is not one of those wrongdoing actions. That's it. It's very simple. Right is an action that is in harmony with natural law because the taking of it does not result in harm to another being. A wrongdoing is an action which, in taking it, you are acting as the causal agent of harm for another human being through the transgressions against natural law, which are murder, assault, rape, theft, trespass, and coercion. Essentially, all of those things are forms of theft. Murder and assault, form of theft of the physical well-being of a being and possibly up to their life. Okay,
Mark?
It's not yours to take, and therefore that's a form of theft. Rape, again, the theft of free will to sexually associate with whom one chooses. That's a form of theft. Murder, assault, rape, theft. That's taking property that doesn't belong to you. Trespass. That's taking someone's security in their own lair, which isn't yours to take from them. And then coercion. That's taking someone else's free will, which is theirs, to choose as they will act so long as they aren't hurting anybody else. So trying to coerce somebody to do something that they don't want to do is coercion, and that's a form of theft over someone's free will. So theft boils down to the one and only wrongdoing. So ultimately, a right is an action that does not involve theft. That's about as simplified of a definition as one could give for what a right is. A right is a behavior that does not involve theft, because theft is... Yes.
Let me just finish your point. I'm sorry.
No, I was saying theft is what you could categorize all wrongdoings as. All wrongdoings are forms of theft. So therefore, if you understand that, the apophatic process is going to result in your understanding of a right as any behavior that does not involve theft. Then that becomes a right. That is what a right is. And that's how the process of apophysis works. You have to get to the negative to get to the positive. Understand what is not
positive.
Yeah.
I love that.
So it's affirmation through the process of negation. You're understanding what something is, that's affirmation, describing what it is, through the process of negation, which is saying all these things are false and are not what this thing is, so I'm going to understand that negative aspect, and through understanding that, I'm getting to what the thing actually is and able to affirm what it is. So just what
okay.
we did there. Did the
okay,
negative process? Yes. Yep.
The negative process. We got about 5 minutes left.
Okay.
And one thing I did want to say is one of my great realizations in my life is I've been doing an apophatic process my entire life. I've been constantly writing and thinking and talking to people and just boiling down to figure out what's really going on at a very deep level. I never knew it was an apophatic process until I heard your work on the subject. And this is an extremely important point. That's why I wanted to bring it up. I mean, as you notice, I've not been asking a lot of questions because I've just been loving the way you've been talking, what you've been saying, and the brilliance of your thinking. But this whole thing, this apathetic process, to me, this is the heart of how you get to the truth.
Right.
And, you know, and one of my expressions has been that our personal growth is a negative, then a positive process. We have to get
right.
rid of that which doesn't work, and then we can build what we want. It's kind of funny because... about maybe 18 years ago, I spent a lot of time really studying Tony Robbins. I went to a couple of his seminars. I bought his books, all this stuff. And I quite frankly got virtually no value out of it. And I realized I wasn't ready at that time. Now I'm going back. In fact, I was reading some of his material this morning, and it was so powerful. And I think,
right.
and like I said, this is why one of the things I was going to talk with Janice about was how doing, like saying conspiracies, for want of a better term, is actually – a very much a personal development process, because by getting to the real truth of what's going on at the deepest level, then you can
mm-hmm.
build, you know, the kind of world we want to build. And that's what all this exposure of, you know, Bilderbergs and banking and Syria and on and on and on. It's about getting rid of all the stuff that's preventing, you know, the human race from being what it's supposed to be, what it can be.
Well, it could be, right. Yeah.
Oh, it could be. And this is why, you know, like I said, the one thing I really wanted to ask about was apophatic, and even in the email I sent you, I was because to me that was a revelation. Realized it's been something I've been doing my whole life. I'd be willing to bet there's a lot of listeners that have also been doing it. And you know, and like I said, I almost hated to interrupt you because I just been just loving hearing you talk, and you're so brilliant. This has just been a wonderful interview. We do have about three minutes left, and what I want to do is, first of all, two things. One, if you have any concluding points, and two, please give the listeners where they can get a hold of you, where they contact
sure.
you and learn more about this.
Yeah, and you made great, great points there, and I appreciate you saying that you've gotten a lot about out of the information that I've put forward on this topic. I thank you for that. What I would conclude with is I'll expand on that topic of apophysis briefly. What we need to do in the world is so much less about doing something new than it is about abandoning what we are already doing.
Mm-hmm.
It's, again, like if you want a beach ball to float on the water, you don't continuously apply force to hold it underneath the water. You
mm-hmm.
just take the force off. Stop what you're doing, and you let it float up to the surface, and that's its natural state.
Mm-hmm.
What we're doing is we're thinking through flawed fundamental axioms in our mind that we have to continue to behave a certain way. And in doing that, we're acting as the force holding that beach ball down instead of allowing it to express its natural state and come right up to the surface and float there. Okay, and that's representative of what we say we want. It's all
mm-hmm.
about the apophatic process of stopping
Absolutely.
Doing what
yes.
we are doing that's holding it up. I'll conclude there, and we could, you know, maybe expand on this at a future time. I know the show
Absolutely.
Is coming to an end.
I'd love to do that. Okay, can
sure.
you just
I'll
give,
tell people
give...
my main website is
yes,
whatonearthisshappening.com.
When
you
what
go there,
I
recommend
yes.
highly when you go to whatonearthisshappening.com, go through the podcasts in order. That's my best recommendation to you. Well, you can watch the videos, okay, and mm-hmm. do those in any order you'd like to.
Okay, Mark, we got less than 60 seconds, so very quickly just wrap up.
The podcasts in order will help you to understand the tapestry and the progression. So that's my best recommendation. Take them in order at your own pace from number one forward. And you could also check out my other website at freeyourmindconference.com.
Freeyourmindconference.com.
I want to thank you so much for bringing me on the show today. It was great. And if you want to do it again and expand more on natural law in a future show, I'm up for that.
Absolutely. We got to hang up now, but I really appreciate this. Thank you so much, Mark. Thank you, audience. This has been a great show. This is Roger North signing off for Great Info to Know.